Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. And this is Coach Chuck Griese with another week of American Tennis. Every week on the UR Tennis Network, you can hear different shows. On Mondays, we have Parenting Aces with Lisa Stone at noon. 2 hours from now, folks, Jason Haynes comes on with his college tennis show each and every week. He has different collegiate coaches on to talk about their programs. But this is the UR Tennis Network. You can listen to every UR Tennis program by going to your iPhone and the iPod contest, the pod contact there. You can just click on it in the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, number 10, and then S Network. We are started the third. Actually, it's the fourth year of UR Tennis, the American Tennis program. We're pretty close to starting our third year. If you want to be a guest today or just ask some questions of our guests, call in 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. And every week I state that our mission here with American Tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out, not just operate with cliches and facts, but let's get opinions on the table, go to opinions, feelings, needs, and those things that are deeper and need to be talked about. All that we ask is for you to stay professional, address issues, not people, and we can talk pretty much about anything we want to, folks, in the world of tennis. And we've had some great shows already this year. And many, many more coming. Edmund Burke, his quote is my favorite, that he says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men or good people to do nothing. And our duty, it's our duty. If we don't do the work we've been called to do, it may never get done, I heard somebody say one time. And it's our duty as tennis people to try to help wherever we can and keep tennis prospering in the U.S. We have a great guest on today, and I'm going to give a few intros here because this is one of the coaches I respect more than any other coach in the United States, and let me tell you why. I've probably known Sam Paul for over 30 years, and I've seen every step of his evolution, but his journey as a coach, as a mentor, and as a teacher. And he has coached on many, many different levels, but he was always, I can remember, Coach Sam, you're on the line, aren't you?
I'm here, Coach Creasy. Yes, sir.
Okay,
thank you for
having me. Well, listen, thank you, Sam, for being on. I know how busy it is. You're getting ready to go to the ACC tournament if you're not already there and on your way. But, Sam, I just wanted to say I can remember you as a player, Jim Boykin. You know, the great people a lot of times go unnoticed, but the great people like Jim Boykin, who mentored so many people over at Anderson College. He had national championship teams of his own there. But you started out there, and then you went to Presbyterian College, and we've had so many issues come up about Clinton, South Carolina, Presbyterian College, and the great heritage they've had there, not only Jim Layton, but going back many, many years to back even the 30s. We've had Chuck Waldron come on and give a sort of a history lesson about tennis in the South was all started there in Clinton, South Carolina. But then getting into coaching, my golly, you've coached, you did your assistant work, I believe, at South Carolina and under
yep.
Kent DeMars, and then you also went and you were coach at Richmond. And then I think you came back, then you came back and coached 4 or 5 years for Alan Morris, who actually got, folks, if you know, Alan Morris was one of the greatest collegiate players ever at Presbyterian College, and he went on to be a semifinalist at Wimbledon. And then he coached at University of North Carolina. And, Sam, I can't believe you've already been in North Carolina 24 years, maybe. Am I right?
Actually, Chuck, this is my this is my 25th year, 25th season at North Carolina. I can't believe it either.
I was just guessing, but 25 years as the head coach at University of North Carolina. But, Sam, respect comes from just years of doing things in a quality way, year in, year out, day in, day out, caring about the people you have. And the last thing I'm going to say before I'm going to turn it over and get you to talk some here is that you're known by the fruit of your work, and your people like your Tripp Phillips, your Don Johnson, and just all the players. We were talking about David Cheatwood the other day. Brad Emmendorfer and I was, and the kind of people that have come out of University of North Carolina and been under you, that's probably your greatest legacy. So, and Sam, just going to go very quickly here and ask you about your coaching journey. You know, you grew up in Lancaster, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, Lancaster, South Carolina. That's right.
And how did you ever get into tennis? I mean, in Lancaster, South Carolina, I've got a reason for asking you this, but you go ahead and tell the story, and then I'll give you my reason.
Sure. You know, Coach, the grassroots, you talk about grassroots of starting out and falling in love with the game of tennis. Actually, my next-door neighbor built a tennis court in his backyard, and so it was sort of in our side yard at that time, and that's actually where I really just fell in love with the sport. And then, of course, this was back in the 70s when you know, I played every sport, you know, basketball, baseball, and I was a swimmer too. And then I just fell in love with the game of tennis. And I give my next-door neighbor, his name was Bob Doster, you know, a tremendous amount of credit for that. And they put a lot to our – even a little small town like Lancaster, South Carolina at the time. We finished fourth in the state 4A championships, you know, a little small town like that. And had a lot to do with – Bob Doster and Don Dixon. So those guys, again, starting out at grassroots at that level.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, too, and I'm going to come back to my reason for asking this, but you were smart enough, and I want to say smart enough because we're going to talk about college tennis, but you looked for your opportunity from Lancaster, South Carolina, to be able to go play somewhere, and you found a great coach in Jim Boykin that would allow you an opportunity. And you got an opportunity to go there and to grow, you know. So whereas a lot of players now, if they were in the same situation, they might, you know, go to University of North Carolina or South Carolina and sit on the bench, but you went to a place where someone would mentor you, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, correct. Yeah. Actually, I was state champion my senior year in South Carolina, and my dream, Coach, really, to be honest with you, at that time, because you had done such a, you know, put Clemson on the map as a national program, that would obviously be one of my dreams to go play Division I within the state, and certainly with your program to be one of the top 10 programs in the country. But, you know, realistically, I just wasn't good enough, and my dream was to go to play at Anderson, a two-year school at the time, and it was really difficult to leave Coach Boykin because his love for tennis, how much he gave to all of us, you know, on the court and off the court, you know, was a great experience for me. And then I transferred to Presbyterian, and that was a great experience also. But, you know, those were my goals starting out early on.
Well, that's why I'm impressed, is that you saw the pathway and you took each step. But my reason for talking about Lancaster and you coming up there in your backyard or next door neighbor's backyard was that many times on this show I brought up the fact that we have 72% of our professional athletes in all sports come from small towns like Shelby, North Carolina, Lancaster, North Carolina, French Lick, Indiana, you know, Podunk, Central Tennessee. But these are the places where the great athletes are spawned. And the reason, I believe, is because sports is still a paramount. They haven't been to the circus too many times. You know, I mean, would you agree with what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the lessons that you learn from, you know, I'm so fortunate that I was able to learn so many invaluable lessons for my life just by playing the sport of tennis and being committed to a sport, leadership, self-discipline, values for your family, the same thing as our team values for my own individual family. So it's just I was just very fortunate to have all of that as a young man growing up.
Yeah, me too. Growing up in Indiana, I got to go to Tennessee Tech, and I was at, you know, back then I would have been drafted to Vietnam. We didn't have back then, everybody didn't have a chance to go to college. It was a rarity. But the thing I'm bringing up is, Sam, we are starting a program. I'm trying to get a pilot program started this summer called Small Town Tennis USA, where we get some college players, some down-the-line college players, a six or seven or eight guy who are in love with tennis that might be good teachers, and we're trying to put them in small communities. This summer we're going to put three, one young man from Limestone's actually going to go by Clinton. Chuck Waldron's helping place him, but we got two Citadel young men. One will be going over to down to Kingsland, Georgia. One will be going over to St. George, South Carolina. And basically what we're trying to do is provide some instruction for small-town kids and try to tap really in there and help them, but at the same time train people while they're still in college to maybe think about a coaching profession. So, but anyhow, you got yours there. Listen, Sam, look, we want to talk about your team a lot. You're right in the thick of things right now. I think in the latest rankings, you were number six in the United States. You've had a great year. You're number two seed going into the ACC tournament this weekend. The journey, the goals, the hopes, I mean, I remember too well, just every waking day you have to recruit. Every waking day you have to try to stay on top of what your guys are doing. Talk about your team a little bit this year and why it's been successful and what the cutting edge is between being a great team like you have and just being, you know, good or average.
Well, Coach, we're actually, just to give you a current update of ranking, we're 22-4. We're ranked nationally number 9 in the country, and we're actually the number 3 seed going to the conference tournament.
Okay, only you would point these things out. Okay, but anyhow, okay that's pretty darn good.
But again, you know, we got a very competitive conference. We think 9 teams in the league this year are going to make the NCAA tournament. So it's just very, very competitive, and I think there's no doubt, Coach, that, you know, we are recruiting every day. I mean, we to Duke this past Sunday, and then we came back on Monday morning. We had a recruit in our office at 9 a.m. So those things are never stopping. And then talking about our team, I'm very proud of our team because we have the best grade point average of all the men's scholarship teams at North Carolina. So that's one of our first missions here at North Carolina, is to make sure that they're doing well academically and they're on the path to graduate. And our team has a 3.1 grade point average in the fall. So I'm really proud of that fact for all of our guys. And then I'm really proud of my team because they've made a huge commitment and they've worked extremely hard all year. So I think as you go into this part of the season, you know, we've worked our tails off, you know, in the gym and on the track and certainly coming in for morning workouts and coming out for practice. So, you know, as we go into the final part of our season, you know, I as a coach want these guys to be rewarded for all the hard work that they've done. And we know this is the most fun part of the season and the most competitive part of the season. So, you know, we feel like we're in a great spot right now for the postseason. And, it all starts over again here on Friday.
So do you play Friday first round or is it tomorrow first round?
No, so we had a bye first round. So we play the winner of Georgia Tech and NC State on Friday at 3 o'clock. Yep.
Okay, over there in Cary, North Carolina, Raleigh. Yeah, that should be an extremely competitive situation. You know, Sam, you talk about it being the most exciting time of the year, and this is the time where it really is all on the line. And I just want to make a statement. One time I read this statement, it wasn't a Johnny Wooden statement, or no, this was a Lombardi thing. He said that once an athlete feels the great satisfaction of suffering long and suffering much with his teammates in another group, he will never again settle for a imposter or settle for something that is less than that. I mean, would you say that's the truth on that?
Oh, absolutely, right? Absolutely true. You know, and I think the same thing of suffering all year long and working all year long, and sometimes just it. You know, taking a loss actually might be a good thing for your team because it's a bonding time, and you know, from that you'll grow and you'll work harder, and it'll grow the bond with your team a little bit stronger, and we'll work harder in practice and remain more focused. So nothing could be truer, I don't think.
Well, talk about that when you take a loss, and I know that because this is important to me. I mean, teams react to that. The people up listening today would probably want to know, well, how does a loss help you? Talk about that.
Yeah, I think number one, I think we approach it, you know, there really is no loss, right? It's just a temporary defeat, and that's how we look at it because we're just trying to teach these guys we're just on a path of being successful, and that's just part of the business, you know. And I say the same thing with professional players like Don Johnson. You know, he played on the tour for 13 years, and he only won 24 tournaments, where my current associate head coach, Tripp Phillips, he played on the tour for 8 years and only won two ATP events. So, again, it's a day-to-day process of getting better and staying in the moment and working. And when you go out and you've put all this energy into this one event and then you fail in that event that day, you come right back from it and you just go right back to work the very next day and you just keep moving forward and moving forward. And sometimes you can be cruising along and thinking that everything's going really well and the loss can bring you back to reality and say, you know, I thought I was working really hard. I thought I was really intense, but I need to even work harder than I was working. So, and again, Coach, I think, you know, if I go back to my love of tennis and the days that I love tennis and, you know, I started out working at Clemson Tiger Tennis Camp, which was such an honor for me to work there for you and for Ed Dixon, your assistant coach at the time. You know, I was working your tennis camp, but I was also loving, you know, going into your office and seeing all those different quotes, you know, on your board and watching how you trained some of the guys that were still there over the summer. And that was, that even goes back to my memory bank now and knowing that, you know, we competed against each other for, you know, a number of years when you were at Clemson and how hard and how disciplined your teams were. And we knew that every time we went into battle with you guys that they had paid a price and they had suffered and that they were really, this time of year, you know, going to give you everything it absolutely had. So I think, you know, just all those lessons, you know, through it's been like 35 years now or so. And the coach, I want to thank you for a big reason that I went into coaching collegiate tennis was that I had the opportunity to work at your tennis camp, and that developed the love of collegiate tennis and NCAA tennis for me.
Well, you're very, very kind, and I appreciate it. We still do the – folks, by the way, our tennis camp's still running. Look at chuckcreasy.net or totaltennistraining.com. But, Sam, what's the name of your website for your camp real quick? Because people will
It's CarolinaTennisSchool.com, just CarolinaTennisSchool.com. Yep.
CarolinaTennisSchool.com. Carolina, we've already got some callers calling in here. We're going to wait till the second half of the show here because we've got so much information to get through. But, Sam, you know, you talk about the team and the work and the losses and how you have to rebound from the losses. And I think maybe one of your best success stories I can remember is Don Johnson and the evolution of coming in as a skinny guy from Pennsylvania, correct? Wasn't he from Pennsylvania?
He was from Erie, Pennsylvania. That's right.
Erie,
yep.
Pennsylvania, and a good recruit, but he became a world champion and went from being a good recruit to improving every – I think he was like a five guy, then a three guy, then he was a number one guy. Talk about the way he handled winning and losing so people, our kids out there listening, could understand this. The evolution is not seen anymore.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Coach, you talk about, you know, one of the questions you said about my coaching journey, you know, develop as a coach, and I think that's one of the greatest things that I had the opportunity to watch Don Johnson develop from his senior year. Don was a senior at North Carolina. He changed from a two-handed backhand to a one-handed backhand his senior year, and he played 500 level tennis his senior year. He never made an NCAA tournament in singles or doubles. And then once he finished his senior year, he said, you know, I'm going to go out and try to play some pro tennis. And in the back of my mind, I had no experience in pro tennis, but I certainly said, this guy doesn't have the numbers. And then, you know, about a year later, he comes to me, and he still was training at Chapel Hill. He says, hey, we want to go to the U.S. Open with me. And so he got, you know, into the U.S. Open. And for 13 years, you know, I saw him go from being happy to be at the U.S. Open to then expecting to win rounds at the U.S. Open, and then expecting to win the U.S. Open. So I saw his entire maturity as a player grow, just like you were doing a junior program, to where you were happy that you had a state ranking and then you pursue a southern ranking and then national ranking. So that was a great thing for me to see as a coach. And I think the one bottom line thing that the reason Don made it is because of his persistence and his work ethic. It was just incredible. And how hard he would work every single day. He used to joke when he was training here, he trained out of Chapel Hill, and again, I was coaching the team here at that time. He says, Coach, I'm the first one to get here and the last one to leave. How are any of your guys on your current team going to catch me? And so that was sort of a joke we had every day, but you know, those are things that we talked to our team about. And then you look at the things that Don gave back to Tripp Phillips, because I think Tripp was a player on our team when Don was training here, and he got to see how well Tripp, you know, how well Don did, and then Tripp ends up making the semifinals of the U.S. Open in men's doubles, and then Nick Monroe is another former player of ours. He's currently ranked 55 in the world in men's doubles, and he'll play all the Grand Slams. So, again, you know, again, the evolution of those players, the one common theme of all those players, they have, you know, one, extremely competitive and have a great work ethic. And, you know, and for me as a coach, you know, I sort of, you know, I was able to watch all of the development, and again, it was just an honor to be around all of those guys, because they'll take you places. So,
well, you know, again, I have a reason for asking this question. Sam, in 1984, we had 39 players that were born in USA, go to college, and end up being ranked in the top 100 ATP. We had 41 that year. Two of them turned pro after high school. The 39 other players had gone to college using college as a stepping stone, you know, for their development. And what a great story about Don and Tripp, you know. And I mean, Nick Monroe is the ultimate story of perseverance. But Sam, up until last month, we only had one, John Isner, in USA Tennis that had come out of college. Only one. And I'm not counting the international students now, because they don't count. They came up in different systems and different ways, and most of them played plenty of pro tennis, and then they might have failed as pros, and they go to college, and then they come back. Now, the point being is that our system used to be the stepping stone to the professionals. It isn't now. We do have three right now, Steve Johnson, and then the kid who went to Stanford is in there right now, I think.
Bradley Kwan.
Bradley Kwan. Right. So we have three. Now, look, on the women's side, Sam, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's been 20 years since we had Lisa Raymond went to Florida, and she became you had a few others in and out, but on the women's side, it's even worse. Why? What's happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. But I think, you know, one thing, too, I think, Chuck, if you look at the overall success of all the players, American players, aren't those three guys the highest-ranked American players right now?
That's not a good statement, you know.
Yeah, that's a big concern, you know. I think for everybody in the U.S. that we're looking at that, and then so I think that I'd like to go back. I'm really old school, but I got into college coaching because I enjoy the development of our players and working with our players as much as we possibly can. And, you know, when we started out coaching, we would play the singles first, 2 out of 3 sets, and we'd play 2 out of 3 doubles. And, you now look at it, and we're starting to, you know, make our matches even smaller than they have been. We're playing 8-game pro sets. You did some no-ad scoring this year. So that could be one thing, one part of it. I think, you know, one part of it is, you know, the players that are great players, they make themselves great players. So the NCAA has limited us to, you know, 20 hours a week, even though how well the kids are doing academically or whatever. So the players that are going to go on to do something special are the ones that are going to put in more time on their own because you just can't get that work done. You think back when, you know, your days of coaching early on, you guys were playing 40 matches a year. And so the development of that and getting out and playing, I was talking to actually a coach from France that coached Simone, and he said that he played when he was 18, he played all the money tournaments in France, and in 1 year he played 110 matches. This is before he became an ATP player, and that was so great for his development. So, the pros play every week, and they need matches. They need the training. They need the experience. So I think it's a combination of all of those factors. I think everybody's really concerned about the short-term goal of winning right now. And some college programs have gone that way where it's just all about recruitment and not development. And we need to get back to just development of the players. And the more time they're on the court, the more experiences they have, and I think the development's going to be better.
Well, I mean, you bring up a lot of very important points that I talk about quite often on the show. And I wanted to say, first of all, old school is not old-fashioned. And you stay old school because there were some pretty good things going on back then with the training. And you had just become a head coach in 1991. I remember Gene Corrigan, who was commissioner at ACC, came to one of our coaches' meetings. And he sat down and said that we were going to cut, NCAA was cutting back all of these rules, or, you know, with all these rules, 20 hours of practice, 25 matches, which is ludicrous. Baseball has 64. No, now I want to give a comparison. Sam, here's a comparison. Baseball presently has 6,000 people making men making a living, USA men making a living of some type playing baseball, 6,000. Last year we had 14 tennis players, USA tennis players, basically making a living, which is terrible. So baseball's farm system and everything, as we know, is good. But it's great in college. They have 66 games or 64 games. Now, the point being is I remember asking Gene Corrigan, I said to him in that meeting, I was sitting right next to him, I said, is this because of academic rule reasons, because of tennis players are very good students for the most part. He said, well, of course, yes, it is. I said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we make it to where if your team has a 3.0 or better, they can do whatever they want to do. If you have a 2.99999, too bad, you got all these rules. Then you would motivate people from the standpoint of excelling to higher levels instead of dumbing down. And he said, well, I think that's a good idea. I went to see the vice president of the NCAA, and the guy said, basically, this is very, very political, and he says that, you know, tennis is just sort of caught in between. Now, Sam, I want to bring this up because this is leading to what we've done this last year with experimental format. So you talked about the amount of matches we used to play. If you remember, yeah, we played 40 or 45 dual matches, but we also played maybe 10 or 15 tournaments, open tournaments, where players could springboard in one weekend from being a number 6 guy to maybe winning a tournament. It was a tremendous system. Then we would have our players playing a very good either 21 and under circuit. Satellite events, I believe, were better than futures because they really cut the mustard. for the players a little bit more directly. A lot of these things, so there's a lot of chefs in the kitchen doing different things. But my question is, this year we've even cut it back worse. We went to this experimental format, and I actively call it the Bullwinkle system on this show, because they cut it back to abbreviated scoring, no ad scoring. And Sam, you've got to agree with me that there were a lot of upsets. Some programs were nearly dismantled because of this. I blame South Carolina's early losses to the Bullwinkle system. I blame Indiana got buried by losing some Bullwinkle matches early. I think Elon beat Duke, which would never have happened. Even though I love Elon, they're in the Southern Conference, but they would have never beaten Duke in a regular format. So anyhow, this experimental format was done, and they just threw it in there at the start of the season. This can cost coaches jobs. This hurts programs, and it doesn't develop players. Tell me your viewpoints on this, even if it's different than what I'm thinking.
Yeah. One thing, Chuck, let's go back to old school. When I said old school, what I was thinking, I think we're going to change that to reality school, because you're not going to get it done. If you don't put the work in as a player at any level and you're not disciplined, the reality of it is you're not going to get the results. So let's not even say old school training. I'm saying, you know, just basic grassroots of hard, really working extremely hard. That's the way your training has to be, and it was certainly tougher. And again, as you're talking about these things where, you know, the satellites, you had to go out and make a commitment for all 4 weeks to play a satellite. And now, you know, players can go play one tournament and pop back home and play one tournament and pop back home. And the same thing with the format now, and certainly I've been in the coaches' meetings to hear the coaches that are advocates of this program. They want to make it shorter because they want their programs, they want college tennis to be on TV. And again, I think the more that we make our sport exciting and the more we worry about the development of the players, and the players hate it. They have not found one player that has played, a former player or a current player, that likes shortening up the format. They want the long format. They want to go out and compete. And this new format is taking conditioning completely out of the match. And that's a big part of tennis, a big part of pro tennis. And again, if we're using collegiate tennis to be a launching pad to the next level, you know, playing professional tennis, and that's what the dream of all these players are, that's one of the reasons that they want to work so hard while they're in college, that we're taking away the vehicle, the opportunity for them to grow as a player and prepare themselves for professional tennis.
That's very, very well said. And the biggest statement you said in there is players hate it. Players are never pulled on this, and coaches were pulled, and there was a vote of 21-19. I want everybody out there to know this. It was 21-19 to use a shortened set at 5-5, play tiebreaker, but then play regular scoring, and it was never approved to do this, and they did it anyway for 5 weeks, and it really, really hurt a lot of programs. But the key is education versus entertainment here. You're speaking at the University of North Carolina. Your greatest pride comes from those players that came through and developed their tennis, not that just had a little bit of a sideshow on a weekend and, hey, it was a nice match. It's the educational value, not the entertainment value. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the reason that I coach. I mean, that's just that's the bottom line why I coach. I would say, you know, I consider myself an educator. You know, helping these guys in all areas of their life. But the true love of tennis and developing their games, is I've never even approached it from an entertainment standpoint or a marketing standpoint. It's always been about developing their guys to be the best they can be in all areas of their life.
I've got a caller here. I'm going to bring a caller on. Area code 931-980. You're on American Tennis. You want to talk to Sam Paul today or make a comment?
I'd like to talk to Sam Paul and talk to you, Coach Crazy.
Oh, this is
Coach Paul.
Coach, I know the voice there.
Coach
okay.
Paul.
I think we know that voice. That's Coach Dixon. He might start yelling at me for my Clemson Tiger tennis camp day.
No, I just wanted to praise you, Sam, about how you helped fix old men forehand too. Not only is he good with college kids, Chuck, he's good with old men.
Yeah, well, good for you. Okay. Hey, Ed Dixon, 28 years of coaching, University of West Virginia, Purdue, Austin Peay, and Coach Dixon, do you have any quick questions for Sam? It's great to hear your voice. Any quick questions for Sam?
Yeah, I got to listen a little bit, Chuck. I got to hear a little bit. I had to get off the line for a while, but I thought it was interesting, Sam, you were talking about Don Johnson. Who else have you had as a coach that you would compare with Don Johnson? Have you had another one like him, or is he a one-of-a-lifetime player?
Well, I think, you know, I saw Coach Morris, Alan Morris, today at lunch, and we were talking about just who would be in your all-time lineup for great players. I mean, certainly, you know, probably one of the most talented and great players was Roland Thornquist, who's now the head women's coach at Florida.
Yeah.
You look at his record. He was ranked top five in the country, you know, two times in his career, and he made the quarterfinals, made every national tournament. He was one of the greatest to ever play here. But, you know, again, and then Tripp Phillips, even looking back at it now after Tripp has graduated and looking at his overall career, he played number one for us for 3 years, and the success that he's had on the pro level, he's certainly one of our best ever. And then, you know, Nick Monroe, as Coach said, he's one of my favorites of all time just because Nick came into Carolina. He was 80 in the country, had lost first round at Kalamazoo in singles and in doubles, and then he came in with a sliced forehand. He changed his forehand, ended up being quarterfinals NCAAs his senior year, and then now he's ranked top. He's 55 in the world in men's doubles, and he's playing all the major tournaments in the world. And so his love for the game and love for development, those are just great, you know. But again, you talk about work ethic and just total dedication and toughness. I mean, Don would have to be at the top level of that. You know, I remember Don had surgery on his hand as a pro in the morning. He was out hitting balls that afternoon on the court, and I wouldn't recommend that for anybody out there, but his desire and work ethic and his pain threshold, Coach, like you used to talk about, you know, you had that in your office, you know, what is your pain threshold? I mean, his was off the charts.
You remember that? Good. Ed, anything, any comments real quick since you've been in coaching? Just let you, any comments on them abbreviating all of the formats and making everything shorter?
I know, it's just making me sick, making you sick, I know. And hopefully saner people will start to get more control. But how much longer do we have to be humiliated on the world scene in tennis before we realize we have to do some things differently? So you hang in there, Chuck, because I know you're a big guy in sports.
I got to jump in there. Pardon? Did you see on the internet, guy, something that's viral? It's a picture of a golfer on a golf green, and they made a golf hole as big as a big old large pizza. Big like a pizza. And so what they've done is then, you know, a kid who's 12 is going to be able to go out and shoot a 65.
Yeah, make a
putt. You know, and make them feel good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always say that making things easy to pick up is easy to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down. They better, instead of trying to make a Disney World experience where kids like it the first day, second day, they're a little tired, the third day they want to go home, and making it more exciting, they got to make it more intriguing and harder. When it's hard to pick up, it's hard to put down. Coach Dixon, I got to get ready to go to commercial here. I hope you'll stay on and listen to the show. Folks, we're on with Sam Paul today. This is Chuck Creese with American Tennis. I'll be right back. And this is Coach Chuck Creese, and I want to talk to you about our 2014 Total Tennis Training Camps that we'll be doing in South Carolina and Atlanta this week and this year. Look at TotalTennisTraining.com or ChuckCreese.net and see about our camps for 2014. This will be the 38th summer of Total Tennis Training Camps. Total Tennis Training teaches much more than forehands and backhands. You'll learn the physical, mental, and the emotional development of your game. And momentum control is a big part of what we teach youngsters at Total Tennis Training. Since 1979, I've worked on 8 simple rules of controlling momentum on the tennis court. Your youngster can learn it, too, at Total Tennis Training Camps. Go to chuckcreasy.net this summer, and we'll see you on the court. American Tennis, we want to make players in America. University of North Carolina is a great place that this is happening. And we're so glad to have Sam Paul on the show this week. Coach Paul, there's 2 places that I think are sleeping giants in USA Tennis. Number one, we've already talked about the 72% of all professional athletes come out of rural, not urban areas. But the other is that we have 350,000 kids participating in high school tennis, but only 26,000, according to USTA statistics, play 5 tournaments a year. That's less than 7%. And if you cut out the 12s and 14 age division, we probably only have 10,000 kids in the 16s and 18s of those high school kids playing. What do you think could be done, and what's the reason for the void here with high school tennis? It's not in every other sport uses high school as a building base. We don't in tennis.
Yeah, it's really sort of a shocking stat there to see that. That's amazing to me that only that few players. I think we got to try to find a way to reach out to the high school coaches and educate them more about how to coach their team and how to, you know, you always see that in basketball. Like here at North Carolina, Coach Williams will have a coaching clinic. You know, he'll have 2,000 high school coaches come to that coach's clinic. And I think we've got to do more of a better job maybe with the high school coaches and get them on a path and educate them about what it takes to develop your program and develop your players. Because, unfortunately, you know, a lot of them are just, you know, using the local pros or a lot of the, you know, the top players in the country that play high school tennis or whatever come from the bigger cities because they have access to some really good professional teaching in that area. So I think we got to do a better job of educating the middle school teachers and the high school teachers about how to build their tennis program.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. That's what we're trying to do with Small Town Tennis USA. Also, there's a coach, Tom Higgins, who retired from Eastern Kentucky, who's living in Charleston right now, and he's by the way, we're trying to get a group started, Sam, you'll love this, 55 and overs court veterans. I talked to Coach Bobby Bayless and things, but we're going to try to get the old guys together and try to not let the wisdom of a Paul Scarpa or a Ted Bartson or a Tom Higgins or an Alan Morris or anybody fall through the crack. We're going to try to have a group of that where we don't lose that. But here's the point I wanted to make. I'm going to ask you a question in making it. If 8 high schools met every 2 weeks over in Carrboro, North Carolina, or Greensboro, or somewhere, and all their players played a tournament, a knockout tournament, every 2 weeks in different places, and it was tournament format, would you as a college coach go watch some of those tournaments?
Well, absolutely. And what a great idea. I think it'd be fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a great recruiting tool and also be great for their development.
Right. As a college coach, I know myself, I never attended one high school dual match. I did actually in Calhoun, Georgia, many, many years ago. I went down and watched a high school match many years ago. but I'm sure that you don't go to high school matches to recruit. That would be correct?
Yeah, I think I've only been to one just to watch a player we had identified, but it wasn't through his high school tennis necessarily, but certainly through his national play.
Yeah,
but,
so that's,
yep, that's exactly right.
30, I did 33 years of coaching. You've done 25, that's 50, whatever, close to 60 years of coaching, and we've never been to high school dual match. Now, the point being is they've made it a participation situation, not a player development situation. Golf, if you might remember, Sam, back in the 60s, as well as track and field, as well as swimming and other sports, were dual match sports, and they went to a tournament format where now the golfers will go to tournaments every 2 weeks, and your number five guy on your Tar Heel team might end up being a national champion. That's impossible for our kids because we play dual matches. Now, I'm not saying to do away with dual matches, but where I'm leading with this is Texas High School, Sam, has a system where they play dual matches with the kids in the fall, whether it's 10 or 15 dual matches, and you can play whatever format you want there. And then all spring, it's individual tournaments. Now, I think we'll all agree that Texas High School develops players probably better than anybody. Could you see merit in that? And just could you talk about that a few minutes about the development versus team play?
I think that's a great point. I think what a great idea for all of that for, because typically a high school season, you know, they'll play, you know, when they start, you know, it could start in late February, March, April, and then they'll be done. You know, so it's 3 months, and some of those guys will put their rackets down and won't play anymore for the rest of the year. So I think that's a great system. And I think if we had that, and the same thing for our collegiate players, you know, the one thing that, you know, once we get in our dual match system right now, one of the hardest jobs we have as coaches is to say, should this guy be playing four, should this guy be playing five, and they get all called up, and you know, then we'll take our number six player, and he'll start beating up on our number two player in practice, and then we don't have the vehicle to move him up in the matches. And, again, the confidence that they gain from winning that tournament or going to that tournament, that's the same thing that I saw with Don, you know, again, when he was going through the pro career, that, you know, he was just happy to be in the tournament, and then he started getting these wins over the best players in the world, and his confidence just grew and grew, and then expected that this is what he should be doing every time he went on the court. And even at the pro level. So players at all stages need that development and need those tournaments for the development, and they need to go through those. And if they come through those situations, their confidence will only grow. So, you know, I think it's great, Chuck. We need it in college also.
Well, I think we don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater, as they say. They've talked a little bit about splitting the seasons. In my opinion, they should split it to where the team is in the fall, the piggyback football weekends, and then you have a Friday night, Sunday afternoon match, and maybe we have 16, 17 matches, and then it's over by Thanksgiving. But then the rest of the year, Sam, we could do the Grand Slam of college tennis of clay courts, indoors, outdoors, and All-American, and then NCAAs, and you could basically build the best amateur circuit in the world for kids, for our players, from January through June. And then they would springboard into the summer, which is what I would like to see, instead of limping into the summer after all of the dual matches and not wanting to play and only wanting to take a rest. They could springboard into the summer. My other point is I do know that a player can lose first round, like you were saying about Don. Then they get a hold of it and make a quarterfinals. Then they win a tournament, and they go to the moon, and they might only be 6-17 or something. So our kids grow exponentially through tournaments, whereas they only grow arithmetically by dual matches. Your number one man there might be 15-4 right now, but if he lost last week to Duke or somebody, he might be close to being on, you know, very, very depressed about that. Whereas he's had, if he was in tournament tennis, that means that he won three tournaments and he lost one first round, then he made one quarterfinals. And now Melanie Udan or any Don Johnson, all that it takes is that one tournament to help them go to a newer level. And I'm against bringing our players back into the fold, I guess, Sam. I want our players
to
be able to to sprint forward. So I don't think we need to do away with dual man. I just think we need some developmental motives instead of trying to continually let's talk about that, about trying to bring crowds in. What's your feeling on that? Is it because of the three-hour match, or is it because of other factors? What's been your experience for getting great crowds to college matches?
I think if our team's doing well, you know, people want to come out and watch your team if they're performing well, you know, and we've certainly done a lot of different things to help market it in our community, and we're spending more time marketing our matches. And like we had, as we played Clemson, it was a kids' day that day. We had a bouncy house out for all the families, and we had face painting and hot dogs and different things like that. But you know, I think if they want to see great competition, and the more that we email and stay in contact with people, one thing, Chuck, to get back to your development of players, I really like the French system of where, you know, how they go minus 30, minus 15. You know, there's different ranking systems because the players are trying to actually achieve a standard of play. And I think once they achieve a standard of play, they know that they're going to be moving towards their professional ranks. You know, I think, you know, how big our country is and how big we are, I think it's very hard to say this guy's one, that guy's two, or whatever. I think in the development of their games, and starting from a very early age on, it's not just about winning and losing. It's about developing your game so that you can move forward to be the best player you possibly can be. And I think so I sort of like, you know, I'm not totally familiar with that all the way through, but I do like, you know, teaching the game and the development of the game and working to get to a standard of play, not necessarily just sort of an end point of a ranking. Because you can get to an end point of ranking in junior tennis in the United States, but that doesn't mean you're going to be successful as you move into the professional ranks. And sort of and the same thing in collegiate tennis also. So just a thought there. But, you know, again, just I think we just work a lot with our fans and trying to keep as much contact with as we can. And just a lot of emails and stuff. But, again, if you've got a good product and it's really fun and exciting and they get to know your players, that's what brings the fans out.
I've always said that two types of people come out. Those that are just avid tennis fans and love tennis, they're going to be there. And then those that know the players and like and respect the players. And you can do the other things and get people out now and then. But there's a big difference between somebody who attends a match versus an avid fan. I always say it's like there's a big difference. You can play tennis every day of your life and never really be a tennis player. You can go to school every day of your life and really never be a student. You have to get the hook in the people's mouth where they fall in love with the sport itself, and it's not just the glimmer on the outside. You brought up an important point. I want to just go here for a quick. Tim Wilkinson was on, who you know very, very well, and so do I, was on J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis show yesterday, and it was great to hear him talk. But J.P. brought up the point system that junior tennis is doing, and I think it's the biggest crippler of our kids right now in incentives. It's crippling incentives. Tim Wilkinson said that he was motivated for two reasons. He said he didn't like losing, and it was rivalry. He said that he wanted to play certain guys and he wanted to beat certain guys. And then he said, secondly, he wanted to try to win titles. You want to try to win a Kalamazoo. You wanted to try to win a Crackerland. You wanted to try to win an Orange Bowl. You wanted to try to win. Golly, Sam, I've asked people over and over, would you rather be NCAA champion or number one in the country, ranked number one in the country? Everybody would say NCAA champion. Rather be number one junior in the country or win Kalamazoo? Well, win Kalamazoo. But he said that, and what we've done, Sam, with the point system is we've been a little too cute with our computers, and now the kids chase points instead of rivalries and titles. Any comments on that?
I think absolutely. You know, I think you see the same thing with some kids' development. You know, Michael Chang said that what we need in the U.S. is that they've got to learn, the United States players need to learn to win with their own peer group. And he's making a comment about some of the top players jumping out and playing ITF events, and then some players staying in the States. If we had everybody, you know, staying in the States and everybody playing everybody, then that would only rise. I remember going to Kalamazoo, and it was so competitive there my first years at Kalamazoo in 1983, 1984, you know, going there as an assistant coach at South Carolina, and they were just great, great players there within our own United States system, and everybody was there. And they had been there all year long. I remember going down to over Thanksgiving to go to the National Indoors and watching Jim Courier and Malavi Washington playing that tournament. And that was great for their development as players. So, I agree with them. We need more confidence in ourselves.
They weren't there for the points, though. They were there for the rivalries and the titles, and that's where we're missing. Now, the one other thing that, Sam, people are missing out with this point system is that our ground troops, like in South Carolina, it was a Belton. Rex Maynard, Jim Russell, these guys would run Belton over years, and it's a great tradition. But it's not a great facility. So let's say the USTA says, look, we're going to regulate Belton to a L3 or an L whatever. You don't have a good enough facility. We're going to move the state championship to a fancy facility in Columbia or something like that. What you do is you cut out the legs from a Rex Maynard or the ground troops who have built those tournaments up, and then you lose your most loyal servants of the game of tennis. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, I have such fond memories of going to Belton, and I knew I was a player at Belton. That's when I first met Jim Russell, and I started my, you know, friendship with him that lasted for 30 years. And that's just great memories. And I guess, and that's the one, you know, the great, like even Crackerland or all these tournaments that are special, that they just sort of bump these tournaments around because of facilities or whatever. You know, once a facility has it, like it's even the same thing with the ACC, Chuck, that, you know, our philosophy that we keep going back to Cary, I think, for the 10th year in a row is because we're trying to develop a community of everybody knows this tournament's going to be here, and they know what we want and what our expectations are as coaches, and they keep making improvements.
Yeah.
And then the fans can come there and stay there. And so that's what we're trying to build within the ACC.
So you're building fans instead of just people go to events. We've got about 3 minutes. I wanted you to talk about your team and what do you have to do to make a mark here, not just in the ACC but the NCAAs. And I want to maybe come back later. If you guys do well, I'm going to come back and play it on one of the shows. But tell me
Absolutely.
What you have to do and tell people out there what you have to do.
Well, one, we got to stay in the moment. You know, we can't be thinking about anything else except for, you know, one point at a time. And to keep our guys focused and just playing and working as hard as we can. You know, we got to look forward to that and embrace that and love every moment. Number two, I mean, it's a big key, we got to stay healthy. You know, as I knock on wood here at my desk, we have to stay healthy and keep everybody, you know, staying healthy this next 3 weeks. And, excuse me, and then we got some really tough training. You know, we go into exams next week. And we'll have a good 2-week training period of doing some, you know, a little bit more running because we'll have a couple of weeks off. And so those weeks for us practice-wise are very, very important conditioning-wise. And then, you know, we just got to embrace the opportunity. And once we get to the tournament, you know, we got to be the hungriest team there to go to work and battle every point.
Any tips on what the X factor is on a great team?
Well, one, you know, I think, you know, this group that we have right now, and they've certainly been a very, very good team. You know, we've got 3 freshmen and 1 sophomore starting, 1 junior and 1 senior. Certainly we want to be a great, great team. But I think, again, leadership within the unit, leadership within the team, within themselves, I think it's very important they play for each other and that the team is very – cohesive, mm-hmm. and they care about each other and their expectations. You know, certainly, again, our goals have been all about the postseason in our program, not the regular season. We're concerned about the postseason and what we do in the postseason. And so I think that's one. And also, too, to be a great team, you've got to have great players, and they've got to work hard, and they've got to keep growing and growing and growing as the year goes on. And as they've got to take those lessons that they've learned all year long and now put it to the end of the year, you know, and learn that when you get into, you know, the final moments. And again, staying in the moment for our team is a big, big thing. We can't be getting ahead of ourselves thinking about winning or losing. We just got to go play and play each point as best as we can.
Well, we appreciate it, Sam. Look,
made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD. He's just made in America. Made in America. Made in America.
And I want to thank Sam Paul. Sam, thanks for being on, and best of luck this weekend. We'll be following you in the ACC and the NCAA, and God bless you for the work you do, man.
Coach, thank you, and thank you for everything you're doing for tennis, and thank you for everything you did for me. You know, it's just amazing.
Okay.
You know,
perfect.
And really an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you. And folks, this is Chuck Creasy reminding you, you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'll see you next week, Wednesday at noon on UR Tennis Network.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.